Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football fans, college football playoff fans across the nation and around the world. This is Tim May with the Tim May Show. It ought to be the Tim May and Matt Wilhelm Show. We'll work on that. We'll try to get some contingencies. But Matt Wilhelm, welcome back to the Tim May Show, my man.
Great to be with you, Tim, as always, and a lot to discuss.
Hey, do you smell that? That smell. That's playoff, man. That's the smell of playoffs in the air. And I'm not talking about the National Football League. I'm talking about the college football playoffs. Ohio State is going to host. It's going to host Tennessee December the 21st. It's less than 2 weeks away. December the 21st at 8 p.m. The first day of winter. An 8 p.m. outdoor football game. Who dreamed of that? But here the Buckeyes are. You know, everybody across the nation and around the world, at least in the northern parts, have always dreamed of getting a Southeastern Conference team to come up and play in the rarefied air of December in a northern school. And here's Ohio State hosting basically the premier game of the day, hosting Tennessee from the Southeastern Conference. 8 o'clock at night. Temperature is supposed to probably be in the mid-30s. That's the projected long-range forecast. I don't think that's good for either team. That's my stance, and I'm sticking to it. But you're a guy that with the Green Bay Packers in 2010, you guys played four straight playoff games, including the Super Bowl, to win the Super Bowl way back when. That's the task Ohio State has decided to take here to win the national championship. It has to win four games in a row. How daunting is that, do you think, for the Ohio State Buckeyes?
Well, given the road that they could potentially have to take, it seems it could be very daunting because of the matchup with a very good Tennessee football team who, you know, is what meandered in and out of the top 10 a lot of the college football season based around their two losses.
Yep.
Then it would be the rematch, you know, that we thought was going to happen in the Big Ten Championship potentially against Oregon, the number one team in the country, and then potentially Texas, who was the long time two, three, or four team in the country. And then, you know, if things work out on the bottom side of the bracket, it would be a matchup against Georgia. And I think there would be some, the table would be set appropriately given what New Year's Eve a few years back with the missed field goal that would have led us to the national championship game, which we thought we would have won against a TCU football team, if I'm not mistaken. But, yeah, to go back to your point about, you know, my career in the National Football League, my final season with Green Bay, we went to Philadelphia with Michael Vick when he was there, resurrected as the Philadelphia Eagle, beat them on the road. And oh, by the way, like for us, and in some cases, maybe not necessarily Ohio State, but, you know, we had to win our last two football games. We had two home football games at Lambeau late. And we, again, did not play well and lost some games we should have won and, you know, and won some games we should have lost, but put ourselves in a position to the point where it was almost like a sixth game playoff for us where it was win week at that point, week 16, you still have a chance to get in as a sixth without help. And then win again week 17 at a home game, I think actually against the Chicago Bears, which they then, you know, probably regretted not playing some of their starters to keep us out of the playoffs. Because we then beat them in the AFC Championship game when they were 13-3 with Urlacher and Jay Cutler and those guys. But so there was just a mentality, there is a mentality, not just about that football team. There's a mentality that needs to get created when you are truly, and again, for you know myself as a coach at St. Ed's for the last 5 or 6 weeks, when you're in that win or go home mentality, very much similar to March Madness. It's all hands on deck. You can't really look ahead. It's survive today, win today. And in many cases, Tim, as we talked about the rivalry game against that team up north, it was throw the stats out the window, walk away with the W because the W, you know, led you to a massive goal associated with the unfinished business. Maybe not necessarily leave no doubt, but unfinished business for sure. But that wasn't taken care of. But then it would have led you to the opportunity that we also has evaded us because of the last few years against that team up north, which was winning a Big Ten title, you know, going to Indianapolis and playing whomever we were going to play. In this case, it would have been a rematch with Oregon and then go win a national championship and seed yourself appropriately in this new 12-team bracket, which, you know, and we'll get into the dichotomy of, where everybody's seated and who everybody's playing. But and you heard Kirby Smart say it after they had won their SEC championship game over Texas, and it was almost like an indirect shot at their athletic director. But in some cases, because the SEC is so treacherous, it's not necessarily on the athletic director.
The
It's just
commissioner.
the commissioner is what the SEC is right now. It was just like, what a gauntlet of a schedule,
Yeah.
on the road games that they played, and then having to come home and stay undefeated at home, which I talked about last week, which those seniors got to do the last 4 years. But they needed the break. They need the mental break. Because when you are in that winner go home mentality, Tim, it's you go so all in on understanding who you're playing, what to take advantage of, what to be alert for, prepare how you're going to attack them, prepare how you're going to prevent specific things they do well. And then when you win, there's a celebration, but it's so short-lived. It's like truly 24 hours, because you have to dump all that information
Yeah.
and then go right back in to start digging into all the new personnel, new personnel, what they do. And again, and just college football has changed, high school football has changed. You could see the veer, or the wing T 1 week and the spread the next. You can see a zone scheme 1 week and then a gap scheme the next. And you can see a dual threat quarterback 1 week and then a pocket quarterback the next week. And so everything you do completely flips in regards to going all in that moment. And again, at Philadelphia, then we went indoors against Atlanta, down in Atlanta, and then we went to Chicago, super cold. And that's the one thing I will also say. I don't necessarily believe, I think maybe there's a comfort level to these SEC teams that are so used to playing in the warmth, kind of south of maybe ten, yeah, the northern part of Tennessee and south, really, if that's kind of like the
I
benchmark.
like how you conveniently drew that line. So Tennessee is in the warmer part of the South.
Absolutely,
You've been to
absolutely, yes,
Knoxville. I mean, yeah, it's
for
not a
sure,
lot
yeah,
different.
absolutely. And
Yeah.
yeah, so it's, I mean, they're in the 50s and 60s right now.
Yeah.
But that being said, the makeup of the Ohio State roster is not the makeup of the Ohio State roster of what it was when I played.
No.
Since Urban Meyer and Mark Pantoni have come in. And I think there's that quote floating around, or that I see, and it actually motivates you to a certain extent. When Urban Meyer had first taken that job, and he's talking to those guys after a practice at some point, he goes, "It's just not good enough." And then just his mentality after watching the, I think on the Triple Option, his the new video podcast that he does now with
Yeah.
Mark Ingram and those guys. It's like he went to the national championship game that he should have been playing in to watch Bama Notre Dame, and he goes, "Notre Dame, we could have beat those guys, and we all know that we should have and be had a national championship in that year." But then he watched Bama in warmups, and he goes, "We can't compete with those guys with where we're at right now and the way that they look."
Yeah.
And so that's when he put out the message to everyone on the Ohio State football staff that we're going to go find the best players in America to come to Columbus, Ohio. And so, what does that represent? That represents Texas and New Jersey and Florida and Georgia and California and Washington. And then, it's
Yeah.
not just Ohio, PA, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, West Virginia, and maybe a few guys from the East Coast who
Contiguous.
understand the cold.
Yeah, contiguous states. Yeah, it
Yeah, so
represents
it's like it's
nationwide.
going to be a little bit of a shock to Tennessee, but again, Ohio State kids, and because we had not the last time we were in the Ohio Stadium with some cold weather and a little bit of crosswind, as we talked about last week, didn't quite handle it all that well. So it'll be a challenge as much for us as it is for them.
Yeah, it wasn't the crosswind that was the problem. It was the Michigan defensive line that Ohio State insisted on pounding its head into about 15 times, sometimes at crucial situations. And, Ryan Day at least did sort of a mea culpa on that when we first met with him last week about that maybe that wasn't the best strategy and didn't put guys in exactly the right positions to be successful. He was talking about, for the most part, his offensive line, but also maybe the running backs. And then the running backs made a couple of mistakes too, and in the choices they made, the split second choices they made after handoffs, et cetera. I mean, I know they're drilling deep on that whole situation. Maybe a shakeup in the offensive line starting group. We'll see, as this goes on. But yeah, the bottom line is it was in the 20s at kickoff for Ohio State, and Ohio State got beat 13 to. Excuse me. Yeah. What was it? No, 16 to 13 in its own stadium in very cold weather. So Why does Ohio State think it has an advantage? That's why I keep telling everybody, this isn't an advantage for anybody if the weather's inclement. Now, the long range forecast is calling for temperatures maybe in the mid upper 30s at kickoff on Saturday night, December the 21st, the first day of winter. It's going to be light wind if wind at all. And I don't think there's any precip right now in the forecast, but you and I both know forecast changes every 25, 30 seconds. With that said, I want to ask you this though. Let's get back to this. Like you said, y'all knew if you're going to win the Super Bowl, you had to win four straight games. But you knew if you were going to win the Super Bowl, you had to win that next game, right?
Correct. Yes.
What do you see? What do you see? Without maybe going into great detail, you can go into kind of detail you want. But what do you see about this Ohio State football team that you want? That needs to be different on December the 21st compared to the last time you watched his team play against a 6-5 Michigan team.
Yeah, well, I think first and foremost, and again, without like watching it and listening to it in detail the way that you did, being there, spending that time with Ryan Day is the fact that they're not satisfied, that they're still a work in progress. And even I'll say that the best teams in college football are a work in progress. And truly, as I kind of made a prediction about how that game was going to potentially be won or close with Michigan, it was all predicated about the offensive defensive line. And just doing a little bit of homework on the Tennessee football team, they've D-line deep and talented. You got the freshman quarterback, you've got a great running back who's going to come in, which is going to challenge us defensively. And we and here's the other thing that I'll say is, so I'll say offensive defensive line to answer your question, because it's all going to start in the trenches, especially if the weather is semi-inclement, whether it's just cold. Cold's still a hard football. Cold is still, stiff hands catching a hard football, and so on. So it's a thing, but I'm not going to make it a thing. It's going to come down to stopping their run game and forcing a freshman to beat you in the air with talented players. Don't get me wrong. And then I also think, and it's we do need to run the football, but not to the point where at nauseam where it can lose us a football game. And so I think that's what it comes down to. And the one thing that I think about, as we prep for, playoffs at the high school level, and I go back to my career, is the one thing that I think really, really good teams do, and I'm sure that Ohio State does this, and I hope they do this, because this is also a little bit of a like a funky dynamic playing, playing 2 weeks ago and now playing in 2 weeks, whereas like typically they'd be playing January 1, January 3, so it'd be a little bit more extended. So it's the coaches creating a practice structure that fits the build up to this game. And my point in saying that is to the benefit of our offensive and defensive line, because neither of them were overly impressive the last time we saw them against Michigan, is when we start bowl practice. And maybe we get through a little bit of acclimation, which is just helmets and shoulder pads for a day or two, but then we go full pads for a few days before we potentially, go into full Tennessee prep. Is I would love to see us go good on good. I would love to see our potential offensive line, whoever that's going to be or whatever they're tinkering with, block, Tyleik and Jack Sawyer and JTT, and deal with our
Hamilton.
good on the defensive line and block them up with some of these, with this new configuration, with some of the new schemes we potentially are gonna, attempt or try to master that really didn't look that great against a very good off defensive line from Michigan. And because this is what happens, and I know we have great players, but like scout team players are scout teams players. They're typically a developmental player that's a year or two away from helping and actually getting out on the roster as either a starter or even a contributor at a school like Ohio State. And so there's going to be a drop off for this like mix and match that we're doing at offensive line until we figure out who exactly those five are going to be. And if we get a picture that's just not as physical or as fast or as talented for the next couple of weeks, when we go see a very talented SEC defensive line and defense in Tennessee, we're going to be a little awestruck by the speed, strength, and power of this group. Whereas seeing our defensive line is going to be essentially in good on good or one-on-one situations, is going to mimic the speed, physicality, execution, and talent level of an SEC defense. And I think the more that we can dabble, and again, it could be a period of it or two periods in a practice, and the rest can be focused on Tennessee. Or it could be we're going to go good on good all practice, again, safely to not get anybody injured because we're trying to go win a natty. But we're going to do it that iron sharpens iron mentality. And so I think that is something that our offensive defensive line can benefit from immensely, given to your point about what we saw last out of both of those groups. We couldn't get a stop defensively when we needed to up front from a physicality standpoint, and we couldn't go get yards on the ground when we wanted to running the football.
Yeah, that's got to be staring them in the face. Because, like I said, I mean, as much as I praise Ohio State defense the last many weeks, the fourth quarter of the Michigan game, Ohio State only ran seven plays on offense. Michigan had two extended drives. One didn't come to fruition because of a great play by Jack Sawyer, and one did. A field goal that which won the game finally. And so everybody has their. Everybody has their burden to bear when it comes to straightening this thing out. Like I prefaced with at the very beginning, you were part of a team that had to play at playoff caliber football for six straight weeks, seven straight weeks in the National Football League. You had no bye, you had no off week between the end of your regular season and the start of the playoffs. Then y'all won four playoff games in a row to win the Super Bowl. Is this Are these college programs rosters built because you don't have a waiver wire, or a free agent
Right.
wire? Are these rosters built to go play that intensity, that high intensity, a schedule for four straight games? That's not four straight weeks. There's a week and a half, 2 weeks in between the rounds, depending on how you do look at the calendar. But are these teams equipped for this? Are they built for this? I'm talking about any
Well,
team.
sure, you and I'll say going through, and I have the bracket kind of up in front of me on my computer. It's like I would imagine Clemson, Texas, I believe Tennessee and Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, Notre Dame, and Georgia are probably built for this. And the reason why I say that is because they have all of them have over the last 3 to 5 years collectively all had stacked multiple top 10 recruiting classes on top of each other. If not, top five, those schools that I'm talking about. Whereas Indiana, we know how Indiana's constructed, right? Through the portal with first year head coach. Boise's probably got depth issues. They probably worked the portal, but it's still Boise. No offense to them, they deserve to be where they're at. But it's Boise State in a call it a non P4, right? Conference. So they're going to be, their starters are probably super talented, probably couldn't play at any other places I just rattled off. Or only a few of them, sport, especially I know the running back probably could, but I bet,
I would take Ashton
depth,
Jeanty no matter where I am. Go
right?
ahead
But depth and development are probably, on the back burner towards winning football games with their starters,
now.
right? And I would say SMU on the jump from the Pac-12 into the ACC is probably, it's probably being constructed to become that and stay there. But in year one in this jump, probably doesn't have the depth and development that the other schools that I just mentioned does, and then potentially Arizona State. And the reason why I say Arizona State is Arizona State probably mimics Indiana, a West Coast version of Indiana the most, who, young Kenny Dillingham, projected to finish last in the, in the Big 12, has a bunch of portal guys and a bunch of guys that are all in. Sounds just like Kurt Cignetti and the Indiana Hoosiers, right? But I would say that they're a team that one of the wrong players going down, that next guy in is going to be a hole for them to this point. So I would say, the way that it's constructed, what did I say? Eight of the 12 are constructed or should be constructed with talented football players, with talented coaches married together from a developmental standpoint. That will there be drop off? Yes, because a starter is a starter for a reason, or unless it's like a 1A, 1B situation, kind of like with, with Hancock for us, right? Could he start on every other place in the country? Sure. We just happen to be super deep in the defensive backfield with Igbinosin and Burke and the guys that we have at corner. But we'll find this out too. I mean, look at what Georgia with Beck potentially being hurt. Georgia's the number two seed, who's Heisman hopeful candidate, top five on Mel Kiper's, quarterback draft list for next season. now has an elbow injury. And I saw a quick blurb about it only because it's relative to being in the bottom side of the bracket, but it's a 2 week injury. You know, Josh Allen played with this injury last year after sitting out 1 week and then played in that second week. Could be a possibility for Carson Beck in this situation. If it's a grade two, it's a 6 week non-surgical injury, 6 to 8 week non-surgical injury, which means he's done for the year. And if it's a grade three, which we don't know this yet, it's literally surgery 6 to 8 months, the equivalent to an ACL, but on your elbow. And now his draft status is in limbo. So that said, you're going to rely upon this hyper talented. We got to see a little clip of him, you know, and they protected him really well by using his legs, not so much in the passing game, you know, late in that football game to secure that victory over Texas. But you're going to rely upon either freshman or redshirt freshman, you know, Georgia kid, grew up wanting to be a Georgia Bulldog, to go out and perform against potentially Notre Dame, and then potentially against, you know, Penn State, SMU, or Boise, as you if you continue to do. So like, that's what this playoff is about. And I would imagine, to make this, like, bring it all full circle, that the teams that I mentioned are constructed, and that the kids that are waiting in the wings are waiting in the wings, like, not too far from being a starter. It's like they're going to be the dude next year. Well, guy gets hurt ahead of you, you got to be the dude now and help us go win a natty and then carry that into next year.
Champing at the bit. You know, the interesting thing about Georgia is what the committee would have done with Georgia if Texas had won in overtime instead of Georgia. Georgia would have had three losses and would have lost, for all intents and purposes, lost its starting quarterback in Carson Beck, much like Florida State did last year. An undefeated Florida State got left out of the playoff. Now, it was only a 14 playoff, but it was crazy.
Right.
Georgia would have been a three team, still claiming it deserves to be in. But the committee, you got to figure the committee would have looked at it in similar fashion that it did with Florida State, and maybe left Georgia at home. And the good thing for Georgia was it won. It not only won its way in, automatic qualifier, but being Southeastern Conference champion, it got the first week bye, the first game byes, which gives them either time to get Beck ready again or to get
Time to
Stockton
go all in
really.
on the backup.
The backup Stockton on the beam. So he threw a really critical interception there near the end of overtime, but then near the end of regulation. But then he did step up in overtime. You saw where Beck got the handoff for the win. What a crazy game that was. I wanted to ask you this from an Ohio State standpoint. Just from the last time you saw Ohio State, Matt, what do you want? What would you like to see different about the offense? I mean, basically, Ryan, in so many words, said, "You know what? We got great receivers. Let's exploit that." He said that in so many words. That wasn't an exact quote. That's what Tim Mayes said before the game against
Joe Platt
Michigan.
said throughout the whole game.
And what I said throughout the and what you said throughout the whole game, and what I said after the game. Do coaches sometimes have to be, you played for some stubborn coaches, do they have to be sometimes shoved into this new reality? You understand what I'm saying? Because you really got the point that Ohio State was trying to make a point against Michigan instead of just winning the game.
Yeah,
That's
you
simplistic.
make.
Wait a minute. That's simplistic, but it sure looked that way. Go ahead.
Absolutely. And I think that and again, I'm not specifically talking just about Ohio State and the construction of their coaching staff, but I would imagine that, you know, every coach, and having been a coach, you teeter on, you know, taking chances or being a little bit more conservative, right? And some take on a little bit of notion of, hey, we're going to be aggressive, or we're going to be a little bit more conservative. And some, the really good coaches, marry those things together and execute them the best based on game flow. Right, an understanding of, you know, their schedule and understanding of the game and so on and so forth. And and I don't know this to be true. I'm just throwing this out there. Is this is a hope of mine, is that of course Ryan Day is the head football coach. Chip Kelly runs the offense. Justin Fry runs the offensive line. Brian Hartline, you know, co-offensive coordinator and runs the receivers, but has been, you know, around Ohio State football for a lot of his life, you know, especially in the last, what, 6 to 8 years between recruiting and coaching. Is my hope for and the learning lesson is this, is that there's someone on staff that can challenge what's going on, or or potentially, and also in some cases, and I've been in a situation where it's like, dude, what are we doing? And then said coordinator says, said head coach goes, well, what do you think we should do? And so it's like, don't just, complain for the sake of complaining, but have a
Offer.
solution, be solution based. It's like, dude, why don't we blank, 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 right? And rattle that off, right? Because all of these coaches now have been together for years or have an immense amount of coaching experience. So it's not their first rodeo. And I think in some cases, and I'm not trying to say that they're guilty of it because I'm not putting words in anybody's mouth, but it's like if Ryan Day pushed the narrative through Chip Kelly to continue to want to and try to invoke this run game and be physical and show our toughness and whatever. And I'm just trying to role play this is like I would hope that like Brian Hartline, and I'm not trying to say that he does or doesn't, but like or someone I'm naming naming him or Justin Fry would go, Coach, it's not working. We need to do this or this. And because in some cases, coaches get, you get so dialed into what you prepped for, you get so dialed into the game, you get so dialed into your personality as a coach, and Ryan Day in his case is a head coach and also as a former play caller, that you don't even start really digging into that Rolodex. And because you're so focused that it takes an assistant coach to tap you on the shoulder and go, Coach, they're doing this, and show them on the iPad. So we should attack them this way. And then coach goes, it's not that he doesn't know we're capable of this thing that someone's suggesting. It's just buried, and it brings it right back to the forefront of his brain. And go, dude, that's a great point. When we go in at halftime, let's install that for the kids. And it's like, and I've been in these locker rooms as a player and now as a coach to the point where sometimes you can't do it in between series. But when you have that break at halftime, and you're not having success and yet you still want to run the football, well, let's do this. Let's try this. And to have a head coach and an offensive coordinator and/or defensive coordinator for that matter to be open and willing to tinker, right? And then you go, you got 20, I mean, real time 35, real minutes, 20 minutes of a countdown at halftime to like get on a whiteboard, show the guys on the line what they're doing, where they're lining up, and how we're going to block this new scheme or how we're going to protect this blitz that they've had some success with, or what route we're going to attack this coverage with that we feel is going to be successful. And then you build the layers. On those things. And in some cases, you can go back to what wasn't working because maybe it loosens things up for you to go back with things that you practiced all week. You don't know. And so and I think that's the perfect dichotomy, of co when you have, well-established coaches and relationships that like no one gets offended when someone goes, we should do X, Y, Z and throw that in the, in the trash can because it's just not working. It's you have to have like, for the sake of getting that W, like you talked about, which is all that really mattered coming out of the last time we saw Ohio State on a football game, football field was getting that W, whether we run for one rush for 1 yard or 1,000 yards in a football game or throw for zero or throw for 1,000 didn't matter. Getting the win was what superseded everything statistically. And I think that's what I would want. And I think that's what I hope happens in this football game is that through prep, no one, and it goes back to your opening question about, kind of that win or go home mentality and the Green Bay Packers going on the road and winning the Super Bowl, right? Is you are all in to win this football game, like all hands on deck. And then when you do it again. And that means like I'm talking gadgets, trick plays, fake punts, on surprise onside kicks, like by all means necessary. You this isn't let's just get to next week's game because then you'll be sitting at home watching next week's game if you felt like you've left something out there and left a stone unturned.
It was just amazing to me. Like you said, they've got pads now, iPads now, wherever you want to call them, on the sidelines. And it was pretty amazing at Mason Graham for Michigan. They're extremely talented defensive tackle. That guy blew up a bunch of stuff,
Well,
all by himself.
at some point it's good. At some point it's good on good, and their good beat our good a hell of a lot more often than our good did, right? And it and that in some cases is that's a game wrecker, right? So you can block up a play. 10 guys can do their job right, but Mason Graham dominated his one guy, won his 1/11th matchup, and it blew up our play.
Bingo,
Because the
in a
back can't
nutshell.
stretch, the back can't cut back, the back can't hit the gap. There's not enough time to throw the double move because he's in the quarterback's face, and now you've got to like keep the back in protection because you can't just block the four down anymore and you can't get the back out. So when the down the field's covered. There's no check down. And now Will Howard's got to eat the football. He's got to
Yep.
scramble with the football. He gets sacked. Like that's the dominoes that fall when you can't block a guy one on one.
Hey, Will Howard threw two pretty threw had, had a really had a pretty good game throwing the ball, except he had two really horrendous interceptions. So, what is your I'm talking about a, get about against Michigan. You know what I'm talking about. I was getting a flat tire there. You know how you hear that pump, pump, pump. What is your sense of confidence in Will Howard going into this game? I think he is the right guy at the right time, in my opinion. Those two interceptions were unfortunate. They were really well. One of them was just a bad yin and yang situation with Emeka Egbuka. I thought Egbuka took the right curl in, and Will threw a little out, and the most surprised guy on the field was the defensive back who intercepted that ball down in deep in Michigan territory. My point is, what's your sense of confidence with Will Howard as the quarterback for Ohio State headed forward?
I would say if you asked me this question, maybe 3 to 5 days following Michigan, I wouldn't say a whole lot. But I think for Will and for Ohio State's offense and for Ryan Day and the offensive staff, the more you've distanced yourself from those interceptions and distanced yourself from that performance at Ohio Stadium, not to say you forget it, right? But you've put it in a box.
Yeah.
And as of yesterday, you found out like what your future holds, and that's hosting a home game against Tennessee. And I think you've also had time to understand, like watch the film, right? The same way that we expected Will Howard to learn from clock management at the end of the Oregon game to have that never happen again, and the way that he felt and what he was thinking, we heard that via his press conference and the lessons that he learned, and you hope that it never happens again. I think in this case, the guy that I really want to come back is the guy, again, that learned the lessons from the way the Oregon game finished and went down, and the guy that, and in between what happened in Michigan, what there was a guy who entered the Heisman conversation because of the touchdowns. More so than anything, the stats weren't overly gaudy as we're accustomed to with CJ Stroud and with Justin Fields and with Dwayne Haskins, but they were super efficient. Completing over 75% of his passes. And like, that's the guy with a talented wide receiver room that we have of just like, it, and I think now the emergence of Carnell Tate, it's not just Jeremiah Smith or Emeka Ebuka. It's now a three-headed monster of guys that you can scheme and really chess piece and move around and get the football to and move those chains.
Yeah, make them cover all three of those guys. And Brandon Ennis. Brandon Ennis had a great catch and run for a touchdown against Penn State. Ohio State won that game, what was it, 20-13, and he had one of the touchdowns. I mean, the essence is there. G. Scott Jr. tight end, who can pop a seam down the middle, and I'm not sure they used him in the right way against Michigan. I mean, it's you know that's. You had that little throwback pass, which Michigan had seen before and just jumped it, there are all these tools there. If the temperature's in the 30s and there's light or little wind, that should not keep you from throwing the football against this team, which looks slightly vulnerable to that more than it does than it does via the run. So, there, you're right. I mean, there are all kinds of reasons. We're going to come back next week and really kind of lay it out there. What would you do against Tennessee? What Christmas present, early Christmas present, would you give somebody on this Ohio State football team, be it a coach or player or heck, training staff? What the heck, you could go magnanimous there, Matt. But my last question before we go: how do you, as a player, control your emotions right now, knowing, the Michigan game was not going to be the last game you probably played at Ohio State. You knew you were going to get into the playoff if you lost, even if you lost that game. How do you harness now the idea this could be one and done? Don't let it be one and done. Is it literally, like you said a while ago, you treat it like it's one and done, right? I mean, you treat it
You
like
have to.
you don't win.
There's no tomorrow. Like the Rose
Forget
Bowl
about the
doesn't
Rose Bowl
exist.
in Oregon. Go ahead.
Correct. The Rose Bowl doesn't exist if you don't take care of business. And I think the frustration that this group has, I'll say going back to the 2023 Ohio State Michigan game, and then what happened in the Missouri or the Cotton Bowl against Missouri, like those emotions, I'll call it, say, a level of embarrassment, a level of stress, you had to carry with you 360 days, 364 days until you got another opportunity against that team up north. And so, like, there was a fuel that at certain points it probably peaked, and then you kind of distanced yourself from it and kind of went down, right? Well, this is still very fresh, right? And like I said, as I'm, but a lot of them, the emotions are probably still high 2 to 4 days, 3 to 5 days removed from that football game. But now that we're multiple weeks away, I do think it's a level of fuel because for these seniors, and I'll say for this team, right? Team, whatever this is. And I know that, other places throw out what team number they are, which is kind of corny, right? But it's how do you want to be remembered, right? And so for this group, with the, and I'll just say the NIL resources that have supported this group to come back, the NIL resources that have supported the signing of the players as freshmen that have joined this group that have been, a big part of our success this season. That's, the portal to go get Will Howard and Seth McLaughlin and to go get Jeremiah Smith and to go get Quinshon Judkins and to bring back a slew of those seniors. Okay. Like losing to Michigan and being one and done, in the college football playoff. This is an extremely forgettable football team 10 years from now. Like, it's a disaster.
Wow, that's interesting.
Am I wrong? Am I wrong? I mean, a
Well,
loss at Oregon, a
it
loss at
would.
Oregon, which is a challenge, but like what your claim to fame is beating Penn State at Penn State, and James Franklin can't beat anybody, right? So like what, like, okay, great, right? And that's the only thing I'll say. Like, Penn State people think that like we're their rival. Like, Penn State's just a good football team that we beat every year. That's just what it is. Okay. And an Indiana team that was playing out of its mind with a first year head football coach. Like, those are the two things you go back to. And then if, and like, then you go back to, like, say, if you are one and done in the playoffs, what does Penn State do in the playoffs? If they're one and done and Indiana loses to Notre Dame, then you're like, this is an extremely forgettable football season in a decade. Why? Because you didn't accomplish anything. You won double digit football games. You're supposed to do that at Ohio State. I mean, I hate to say it. I'm not even trying to be a dick. I'm just trying to be real. Like, it's true. Like, and think about it. We reference, like, now when we talk about, you talk about 2002 because it's the team that I was on. We talk about 2014 that won a national championship. And then all we talk about is, games that coulda, woulda, shoulda, and you rattle off amazing football players, that were legendary in the Scarlet and Gray that are now in the National Football League, but everybody else falls by the wayside, forgettable, and then you naturally, we shift to what happens next year, the recruiting class and Jeremiah Smith year two, and who's going to be our quarterback, and Devin Brown's transferring, is it going to be Julian Sands' team, is it going to be Kleinhees? Is it going to be Aaron Nolan? I don't know. You know what I mean? That's literally what we can be talking about in 3 weeks if these guys don't go pedal to the metal, hardcore, and win at home.
Ladies and gentlemen, Matt Wilhelm always goes pedal to the metal. That's why he was part of a Super Bowl championship team with the Green Bay Packers of the Frozen North. That's why he was a national championship linebacker with The Ohio State University in 2002. I'm running out of plaudits, so I'll have to think of some more between now and next week's The Tim May Show. But Matt Wilhelm, thanks for bringing it once again, my man. And you're right, you want to be remembered for something, but you don't want to be remembered as the talented team that did in the final analysis nothing. And
Right.
that's the challenge ultimately for this 2024 Ohio State football team. Ladies and gentlemen, until next week, when we will be previewing in more in-depth Ohio State playing, hosting Tennessee, hosting for the first time ever a college football playoff game in the North in Ohio Stadium. Now, I know Notre Dame's got the one the night before, but they're only hosting Indiana. Ohio State's hosting a bona fide Southeastern Conference power in Tennessee. Until next week, for Matt Wilhelm, this is Tim May. We'll see you then.